You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 554 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Seth Miller and Mr. Fosma Moon, who will be joining us shortly.
Eventually.
Soon.
You know, they're building it.
He's getting his laptop built. We speak. There's actually a lot that happened this week compared to last week, where I felt like there wasn't that much news.
Well, we made news up though, so that's cool.
I mean, sure. A bunch of Boeing orders, like tons.
Bunch of planes, lots of planes. Norwegian wants 30 more MAX 8s.
Okay.
So these were options they had from an old order, but, and by old, I mean, when they made the original order, they still had 787s in their fleet.
Okay.
But they had these options on these MAX, and they have since executed on or converted the options to firms. Relatively late deliveries, and I may say relative, it's end of the decade at some point.
Okay.
I think 2030, 2031, something like that. So not too insane, but not imminent. But they plan to grow. Yeah, deliveries through 2031. So they're going to grow. It's going to be fine. It's going to be great.
Yeah. They're growing. Is it also, do they have anything that isn't a MAX now? Like, are there any 800s or anything?
Yeah, they've got some NGs.
So they're going to replace some of those as well.
I would assume so. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Turkish, 50 787s
plus 15 options
and 100.
Excuse me. No, sorry. Plus 10 options. It's 50. I had the tab. It's 50 of the nines and 15 eights.
Okay.
Maybe. And yeah. So, excuse me, not eights, tens, Scott. No one wants eights. Eights are silly.
Terrible. Yeah.
Yeah, they're not bad, but they're silly.
So 15 tens, 50 nines.
Yeah,
what are they? What are they doing with them?
Well, the Airbuses probably need to be replaced, right? All the 330s.
Oh, that's a good point. Forgot about they had the 330s still. Because they don't
It's 50 total, 35 nines and 15 tens. Sorry. But still.
50 total. Okay. Still,
that's a lot.
That's a ton of planes, and then 150 MAX.
Yeah, and that's a intent. It's not an order yet, but you know it'll probably happen.
That's pretty wild. I mean, they're not replacing anything with those. Maybe their Airbus, some of their Airbus fleet.
I mean, they have 57 330s. They've got 27. A300 classics between 319 and 320s, and another 68 320 and 200. So, what is that, about 90 or so classics?
Well, but the 330s, is it also their, because that's also their cargo fleet or part of their cargo fleet? Like they have 777s and 330s as their cargo fleet.
Yeah, so I don't know the breakdown on that, but it's, you know, they've got 22 200s and 35 300s.
Okay. I'm trying to look up some of their cargoes. It looks like it's mostly 200s that are the cargo fleet. Interesting. Okay. Yeah,
generally, that's the case for everybody.
And they still have 777s.
But these are the newer ones, right?
Yeah,
I think they're newer.
Okay. What were you going to say, Seth? Sorry.
No, I was just saying, like, part of the thing is consider duration of these orders. And how long it's going to take. You know, it's officially part of Vision 2033 of getting to 800 aircraft in the fleet. So it's a long time, it's a long timeline, long horizon of getting these aircraft added and. But it'll be replace some old ones, add some new ones, grow a little bit, see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like for the most
part. Lease them out to third parties where it makes sense. Like at this point, right, airlines are just getting in line to get aircraft way down the line.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like a lot of the 330-300s are actually like used for some of the shorter stage length stuff, like to Europe, which is interesting. But I guess it makes sense, right?
The 300 is definitely a regional aircraft, right? They'll fly a lot of that to India, Pakistan, as well as Europe.
Gotcha. Just a lot of planes. 2033, though, that's only 6 years off, you know, 7 years off. So, all right. Breeze, they are going to do some international stuff. Seth, do you want to tell us the rest?
Yeah. No, I do not.
I have them in front of me. Cancun to Norfolk, Charleston, New Orleans, Providence, Montego Bay to Tampa and Raleigh-Durham, and then Punta Cana
to Raleigh Durham. That's Punta Cana, Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
To Raleigh Durham.
And it's a lot of routes. Starts in like February of 2026. Maybe one of them's in January, but it's all next year. A lot of them are once a week, so it's not a massive amount of capacity, but it's getting their feet wet, putting this out there, making it happen. Also as part of all of this, they're going to open a crew base in Raleigh.
Wow. Okay. I mean, you said it's once weekly, out of Cancun to those destinations. So it's not a ton of capacity, but it's quite a lot of flights for them to start up to Cancun.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote it in and out of Cancun. Obviously they're not running a base out of Cancun or anything. I just wrote it that way because of how it made sense of where they're putting things. But, yeah, it's, I mean, four markets out of Cancun. These are, I want to say New Orleans has had service in the past. I'm pretty sure, I'm not sure about the other three, but they're markets where, you know, you can get 100 or so people once a week to go down for a holiday.
Yeah.
Norfolk and Charleston start in January. New Orleans to Cancun and then Tampa to Montego Bay start in February, and Providence to Cancun also. And then, the other two, Punta Cana and the two Raleigh routes, to Montego Bay and Punta Cana start in March.
Okay. I was looking, so Southwest serves New Orleans today to Cancun. Yeah. And so does Spirit. Who knows how long
that's going to be. Spirit does. Yeah.
Well, that's what this is, right? This is like a, dig at them a little bit. I was trying to see if anyone else kind of served it as a one-off. It doesn't look like it's served by anyone else. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, right. Like leisure markets, spring break-ish, spring holidays. We'll see if they end up being year round or seasonal and whatnot, but these aren't terrible leisure markets to try to grab some demand from.
Yeah, for sure. And then what is this about Boeing getting some certification permissions back? What are they're allowed to start certifying MAX 10s?
I think
not MAX 10s. That, come on now. Don't be mean. MAX 10 only barely exists. Notionally an airplane. They're going to be allowed to start self-certifying that the airplanes exist and are, you know, that they meet FAA quality certification levels. So this was after the Alaska Airlines door plug blowout thing a couple of years ago, the FAA stopped letting Boeing self-certify. They brought that all back into FAA staff. And we can debate whether that slowed things down or not, but certainly was more work for the FAA to do it. Some challenges around that, etc. Boeing has been wanting to do it themselves. And so Boeing now, you know, has had enough meetings and that they believe we're in a place where FAA believes that Boeing is in a place where they can do it. We'll see if that proves true. Obviously, I mean, it's hard to know. What's funniest to me is that at least initially, they're going to certify aircraft in alternating weeks.
Okay. So week one, it'll be MAXs. Week two, it'll be 787s.
No, week one, it'll be Boeing, and week two, it'll be FAA.
Oh. I misunderstood that.
Joint custody for your child. I don't understand.
Is it because the FAA can't process everything? Or I'm sure we'd have no idea.
I mean, it could be that it's a way to keep an eye on them. Right? Like if like 1 week Boeing's like, yeah, all these planes are good. And next week FAA comes in and says, yeah, half of these planes are bad. Mm-hmm. It sheds some light as to what the Boeing inspectors are doing.
Nah, that makes a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah, I agreed. I think it's a little bit of that, but it's still, I couldn't help but laugh when I saw this news, remembering like when 787s were originally, when they put up the Charleston plant, or when Airbus spun up its Mobile plant, right? Airlines were like, we actually kind of don't want those first planes from that place. We want someone else to have them because, you know, new hire training. I'm sure they'll be okay, but like, it's harder to get it perfect if you don't have the experience. And so, or in Boeing's case, maybe it's hard to get it perfect even when you do have the experience, but there are folks that airlines sort of, whether joking or not, kind of didn't want to the planes from the newer factories. It's like, do they want the plane that's inspected by Boeing? Do they want the plane that's inspected by the FAA? Can you even, hey, we'll actually take a week. We can take a week delay on this one if you get the other inspector. We'll see.
I mean, it's not a good vote of confidence when people don't want to take your plane off the new factory floor.
I mean, they took them, but it is a thing.
Yeah, I believe it. And then what's this note? FAA to airlines, re-evac to.
Oh, you brought that up.
Yeah, I brought it up. I'm sorry. I was just like trying to reach your shorthand notes here. They're not in Cornell style, so I struggled.
Technically, they are Cornell style since I went to Cornell, right?
I will give it to you on a technicality. So the FAA has sent out a note to the airlines to better train or improve the training to the flight attendants so that people don't take their bags with them when evacuating a plane. And I find this kind of stupid. I really don't think the reason we've been seeing these evacuations with people taking their bags off planes is because of flight attendants. But yeah, weird note from the FAA.
I mean, if they put out the note, does that mean they can disavow responsibility?
So expanding on that, and sorry if my connection shit, so if I'm cross-talking, sorry. It's also a little bit about like update your message, the flight attendant briefings to crew to make it clear to them that they should to passengers that like you need to mention leave your bags behind more often in the briefings and things like that. So who knows if it's real, who knows if it'll help, but it's certainly trying to get the airlines to talk more about this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, back a long time ago we talked about this during one of the incidents, and I got crap on Twitter from people saying don't worry about the people bringing their bags off the plane, and I'm like, it's the thing that would get people killed. Like, that's the one thing. It's the one thing. Anyway, so I guess I'm just barking up the wrong tree. But I guess the FAA agrees with me. So, LATAM. I got that going for me, yeah. LATAM, E2 order. What is this? More plane orders.
LATAM, for the first time in a long time, is going to have smaller aircraft. And by smaller, still 120 plus seats, but E195 E2s, it was a weird number. I think it's like 74, maybe. 25 are firm, the rest are options, or 24 are firm and 50 are options. And they're going to start them in Brazil, which happens to be where Azul operates a ton of Embraer jets and is kind of struggling financially right now.
So they're going to try and get some planes that can fit the markets and put Azul out of business?
That's how it looks to me.
Blood in the water. And then Cathay is coming back to Seattle. They started Hong Kong, Seattle pre-COVID. And then it didn't sound like it was doing very well. And I think COVID certainly killed it. But I think they were starting to reduce the frequencies even before COVID, if I remember right.
I don't think it was ever daily, though.
Okay. So it was always like 3X a week or something?
Yeah, I believe so.
So it's coming back as 4X weekly, with a hope. They made a comment, a hope to increase it to daily. It's an interesting one.
I mean, Delta doesn't fly it anymore.
Yeah. There is no service yet. That's a good point. I would be interested to see if Alaska and them could like come to some kind of agreement, but I'm guessing they couldn't get a JV worked out in time.
No, but they could do code shares.
Yeah. It's just Hong Kong. Like, if you're not going to go north out of Hong Kong, so Japan, Korea, parts of China, you wouldn't serve.
Well, I mean, Japan, Korea, Alaska's running their own flights.
True.
Right. So, but there's a ton of stuff in Southeast Asia.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, could make sense. What were you going to say, Seth? Sorry.
No, I said, what do you mean you wouldn't go north? You wouldn't backtrack for connections, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense for backtracking, but.
Yeah, that's fair.
You could. So, I think it's good news. I'm still like, I will stick to my guns on Seattle being an absolute mess, and I don't understand how they can fit more international service at that airport.
Well, the Hong Kong flight previously left at like midnight or 1 a.m.
Okay.
Someone else raised this issue with me about a flight. I can't remember if it was this one or one. Hang on a second. I'm pulling up the message here. Yeah, it was this specific flight about the timing. And are there enough gates, and where's all immigration going to happen? And my quick scan of sort of scheduled data suggests that the airport says it has 20 gates at the arrival facility that can handle inbound international. I only see 7 that would be parked there. during the sort of time that this flight would be on the ground. It's relatively early in the day on the U.S. side.
Okay.
So physical space is okay. We can debate whether, you know, CBP is staffed enough to handle the volume of passengers of what, you know, an extra 230 people, 250 people coming through during that time. But in theory, it's okay.
Yeah. So now they've made it a day flight instead of the overnight flight.
Yeah.
That's nice.
I mean, like right now, some of the arrivals like Beijing to Seattle, right, has been sitting on the ground for about 15 minutes waiting for a gate. Let's see what else. Taipei, Seattle has been, it's got ADSB issues, but it landed 3 hours ago. So, yeah, I mean, I guess some of the morning arrivals, it's probably okay. It's just, I mean, you also have the departure bank that comes out like right now, right, that's leaving, and it causes all kinds of chaos because you can't get to the international gates while other, you have to like do a big circle around those gates. And just causes a lot of problems. So, I mean, I think it's a valid question. They may have the gates. The taxi times just might be forever. Like it might be, they might block the flight just specifically for the arrival, busyness. So, yeah. Anyway, I've suggested to some friends that they should just build the new airport in Bremerton, and people are like, screw you. They don't want to go to Bremerton. So.
That's, you know, a lovely airport up north they could use.
Bellingham?
Or Everett.
But Everett's, like, that's the thing, is Everett's not big. Like, you can't make Everett any bigger. Like, you can't, that, there's no space to build a bigger airport there.
A bigger terminal or another runway or both?
I mean, I think both.
Definitely can't fit another runway. I'll grant that. How big a terminal do you need?
Well, I mean, are you really going to serve Northern Seattle? Are you going to split traffic between the two? I think you definitely need more space. I think the problem there is it's been proven it doesn't work.
Like, problem there is it's a NIMBY situation where they won't let enough planes in. It's they hamstrung it from the get-go, and which, you know, whether they should or not is, I could argue either way, but and I don't think we need to see it, you know, grow as an airport, but they set it up for failure, and it is failing. They set it up with very limited options for flights. They set it up to not have a ton of capacity. Not surprisingly, Alaska Airlines showed up and took a bunch of that capacity, and arguably is just squatting on it rather than letting some other people show up and compete. It makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone showed up at the table in the open, but a lot of people left.
So yeah.
Really like squatting.
United.
United and Southwest.
Yep. Yeah.
Right. Yes and no. So what I would argue positive by the fact that they took so many of the slots, and right, because Alaska's always had half or more. Originally, I think they had half, and United and Southwest split the other half. By doing that, it limited the ability for anyone else to establish sufficient max scale of operations. If you can't, you know, if you can't set up a magnitude, a scale of operations, one or two flights to a couple different cities isn't, you know, back to your hubs, that's not a strong presence in the market. And so, which isn't to say that, you know, United, if they had access, would set up triple daily to all of their hubs. I doubt that would happen either. But when they could only do two to San Francisco and two to
Denver.
Yeah. Like, it's harder to, you can sort of start to build a schedule for business travelers. But, and oh, by the way, business travel has shifted dramatically since, you know, as they were setting that all up, you know, what became of business travel? So.
But is that really that different than any other outstation where they might only have one or two flights a day? Right? Why is Payne so different than something like, you know, something, trying to think, like Santa Barbara or something like that?
Santa Barbara is way further away from Los Angeles than Payne is from Seattle.
Yeah. But I guess, but from a traffic perspective, right? If you, like, for me, like, if I could fly to Trenton, I would, even though I'm not that far from Newark or Philly, even if it was once or twice a day. Right, there has to be some people who don't want to deal with the longer commute, will deal with the slightly less flexible schedule.
Right, this goes to your point of the conversation we're having on text the other day about New Bedford, Massachusetts.
Yep.
Right, New Bedford is a tiny town on the South Shore, 60-ish miles from Boston, and Cape Air is going to fly a couple times a day from there up to Boston and let people connect onward. It's literally a airplane powered shuttle bus to get people from a cheap parking place and very convenient to the airport so they can connect onward to other places. It's not outbound traffic. You know, it's not travel to hubs or onward to other places. So directly. And, you know, Everett and Seattle are 32 miles apart. Admittedly, it can be 90 minutes driving.
Right. On a good day.
On a good day. But it's only 30, they're only 30 miles apart. So there's not a lot of, I don't think there's a lot of markets where you have a relief airport that close that is not a full operation in its own right. Kaisel is probably the best example I can come up with off the top of my head, and that is not operated by the mainline carriers. It's a right. It's Islip is a truly secondary airport to specific markets, not feeding hubs.
Could this be that the E175 was just too much, and maybe like a 550 could be more successful?
I think it's like you could make Payne the Q400 hub if you had them still.
To where?
Portland. Relief, track for relief via Portland.
But no one's doing that as a nonstop, Steve. They're all connecting onward out of Seattle, right?
Well, that's what I mean. It's like, okay, so then do you serve Everett with Q400s to Seattle and Portland? And you just create more traffic problems for both airports. I'm being sarcastic.
That's nice.
What the hell is wrong with this guy?
I'm mostly like thinking, okay, if you're going to serve it nonstop, then yeah, CRJ 550s, 700s, maybe the right fit. But Alaska doesn't have those.
Maybe. No, but I mean the other carriers, right? Like where we're talking about other carriers, that carrier diversification.
Does United have any on the West Coast, the 550s?
Yeah, they're flying them out of Denver now.
I wouldn't call it West Coast, but okay.
But I think they have some in San Francisco as well, but they were doing Denver Payne at one point. So that's why I say.
Gotcha. I mean, yeah, it could work. I think I'm looking up right now if they have any 550s on the West Coast here. Of course, it's not actually a type in.
I got you.
I don't know. I mean, I know they're still doing 700s out of and American to 700s out of LA and San Francisco. And United does as well. So maybe, I mean, maybe.
Has Delta got its 550s yet? It was getting some, right?
It was getting some. I don't think they've gotten them yet.
Okay. Denver to in the month of November 2025, Denver, Chicago is going to have one. And then Fargo, Billings, IDA, Idaho Falls.
Idaho Falls.
Yeah. Midland and Lubbock get them.
Ooh, they get 550s in Lubbock now. That's going to be the first time Lubbock has had first class service.
Like ever?
Ever. Yeah, no, ever. Ever.
You're going to make me look this up. Okay.
It's always been E-145s or CR-2s.
Okay.
Well, you're looking that up, Foz.
Yes.
You have the blues.
Oh, the Bluetooth stuff. Have you guys used the Bluetooth stuff on the planes?
I've tried. Too much interference.
So it's funny you say you tried. I, on my flights this week, I did Dallas, Portland. The guy next to me literally spent half of the flight trying to get his headphones to pair.
What was he? Was he using AirPod Pros?
Yes.
I think that's the problem. Okay. So AirPod Pros have a weird pairing problem for things that are not Apple or things that are not items that come up with the actual key or if there's any kind of background interference. So I've never been able to pair them correctly, or I've done it, but I've had to basically hold the button on the back of the AirPod Pros to do it. So force kind of like a reset of the pairing.
Hey, and then on the flight back, like the woman spent like a good hour and a half of the flight back doing the same thing. And like, at what point do you just give up and plug in?
Yep.
Infinite, because no one travels with wired headphones anymore.
But they give them to you if you ask.
Yes, they have them.
Overrated.
Overrated. I would rather sit here and fiddle with this. Well, I mean, I think it's cool tech, but right, it's Bluetooth has never been, I would say, simple. I always think it's been a problematic. It's been a problematic protocol and connection process.
Yeah. Bluetooth was simple when it started. The problem is when Apple and Google took away the ability to stop broadcasting your device.
That's a good point. But others have done that too. Other like Sony has as well. Like you can't stop it. And TVs now have Bluetooth giving out their signal all the time.
Yeah.
Right. But the phones are ubiquitous everywhere you go, right?
True. And I posted this, I posited this back when I was having issues. What I was noticing was once I connected to I finally got it to work. Once I connected to the IFE on the plane, I could not swap back to my iPad. My iPad, it would connect for like a second and then it would fail.
The IFE would steal it back?
Yeah. And it's like, no, No, I turned the IFE off. Like, you guys don't try and connect the thing that was connected to it earlier. That's bad design. So it's very strange.
The airline, or in this case, Panasonic Avionics, would probably argue you disconnected because you got up and went to the bathroom and you probably wanted to come back.
Yeah. Oh, I totally get the use case, but that's not what I want.
Also, Houston Lubbock did have some E-75s over the years, but very few.
Yeah, it's more like it wasn't very regular at all.
Yeah, and American has had mainline flights in and out from time to time as well. Also have had ATRs, so, you know, pick your poison. But yes, United historically has had very few. There have been historically very few mainline aircraft or aircraft with first class seats. Sorry, I finally got the data.
All the first class seats went to Midland because that's where the oil money was. So anyway, back to Bluetooth. I don't know, Foz, what the answer is. I mean, Jason Rabinowitz, friend of the show, he's come on, talked. He uses the little buddy thing that you can plug into the earphone jack that gives a Bluetooth signal, and he's had pretty consistent. That works pretty consistently, but he connects to that and it's got a learned relationship. Like, it's right. A safe connection.
Yeah. And the other reason he does that is because of volume. He's frequently, I've heard him complain that the volume when connected to the head, to the IFE system directly, is too low and won't go up high enough.
Oh, so it can actually magnify the sound.
Well, it uses the wired connection, so you can actually jack the audio volume up.
Gotcha. Okay. Makes sense.
I assume there's something about Bluetooth sort of protecting your ears or whatever that overdoes it and doesn't come up loud enough.
I'm just, I would love to do that, but I don't want to carry another thing in my bag.
I was in another chat with someone, folks from the JetBlue 25 for 25 thing today, and someone's like, how do people travel without headphones and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I don't. I put earplugs in.
Well, you were the one that asked me. You're like, Steven, what, you use the amenity kit? I'm like, yeah, I use the earplugs. And you're like, well, I carry my own. I'm like, I don't. It's just like,
and part of the reason I carry my own is because that's actually, this is the stupidest thing I'm ever gonna say. That's my in-flight entertainment, is I put my earplugs in so I don't have to listen to anything. I don't, even when I watch movies, I'm generally watching movies I've already seen and know basically by heart, because I'm a dork that way. But I'll either watch them with closed captioning or without, but I know them well enough that I know what's going on.
It's funny how much of a movie, even if you don't know a movie, how much you can pick up without actually hearing the audio.
Yeah. And
So Foz, you had wired headphones.
I always have wired headphones.
So you just plugged in and you were just good to go.
Yes.
Yeah. I had a lady, it wasn't too long ago. She sat next to me. I don't remember where it was. It might have been Dulles, Portland. And we had the new IFE with the Bluetooth. And she was trying to use her hearing aids that are Bluetooth to connect. And they don't work because it doesn't use actually Bluetooth. It uses another protocol. So
it's probably more secure.
More secure, and it's more real time. Yeah. So it's like a lower latency. Yes, I see your note, Seth. All right, we're going to talk about, in the bonus topics, U.S. threatening to kill Canadian preclearance, some Lufthansa struggles, American at O'Hare, and United Max flights or planes in Guam. If you're a Patreon subscriber, stick around for that. Thank you to our new Patreon subscribers, Clobs K, Jonathan B, DL, and Carol O. Thank you for supporting the show. We appreciate it. If you aren't a Patreon subscriber, thank you for listening. We also appreciate that. And leave us a comment. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.
See you later.